Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
Happy New Year. Are we actually on? I think I pressed that button about six times.
Now we are. Happy New Year.
How are you?
I am still recovering from a bit of jet lag, but I'm doing very well. Thank you.
How was the West Coast?
It was very West Coasty.
I know what that means.
I've only ever been to the West Coast once before, and that was like the month that I graduated college. I went on a like West Coast road trip. Like I flew out to LA, and then I did Sedona, Arizona, Vegas, Grand Canyon, San Fran, and then we came down Route 1 on the West Coast all the way back to LA. So I didn't get much time in those cities because it was only a 10-day road trip and we did a lot in 10 days. And, it was like a long time ago. I don't know how old I was, but I mean, I think it was more than a decade ago. Definitely. Yeah. About a decade ago. So, it wasn't a very long trip. Amy and I went for 3 days, two nights, which isn't a lot from the East Coast to the West Coast.
No, that's a lot of jet lag
for
a three-day trip.
But Danielle from Against All Grain was our hostess and graciously let us stay at her house and made soup and chaffee for me and was just awesome. You know, like if we had been in a hotel or something, I think it would have been way worse, but she took good care of us and I had like a blackout room to sleep in. And, we had a really great time, Amy and I exploring. Amy had never been west at all. So, she was really excited to travel and see the Pacific Ocean. And we did all the touristy San Fran stuff, but also kind of had local input on where to eat. And, it was fun kind of interacting with a different group on social media. You know, you probably have a lot of Atlanta locals and people ask you questions about, you know, Georgia things to do.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of that about DC, like where should I eat? What should I do? That kind of stuff. And so it was like a completely different group of people that I was interacting with who were excited seeing me do San Fran stuff and giving me recommendations. And that was a lot of fun to like hear from different kinds of people. And then, of course, we met a ton of people at both Nom Nom Paleo's book release party, her book Food for Humans, and then Chris Kresser's Your Personal Paleo Code release party on Saturday, both Saturday morning and Saturday evening. So we met a bunch of people who follow the blog and people that I've seen commenting for years because we have, I don't know if everybody knows this, but paleo was a lot bigger on the West Coast than the East Coast.
Yes.
So us bloggers oftentimes know people from the West Coast because they've been following us for a really long time, but like have never interacted with them at all. Whereas a lot of the East Coast people I see at events and, you know, whatever. So it was just really interesting and nice to put names with faces. Like I had never met Simone from Zen Valley Catering before. I had never met RC from Rubies and Radishes before. Let's see. I met a girl named Carla who was so super cute from Wise Roots. She does a lot of WAP type stuff and she's a nutrition consultant focusing on skin from inside out, which is really cool. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else I met. Oh, I met Shauna from Gluten Free Girl. We had meat cones together in the Ferry Building at Bacalone. My giant chef crush on Chris Constantino. Yeah, so it was just, it was a lot of stuff. Amy and I ate and drank our way through the city. For those people who don't know, Amy is a crazy coffee connoisseur. Like, I've never met anyone who loved anything more than Amy loves coffee. So being in a Northwest area where it was like a ton of coffee, like one block that we walked had five different coffee shops on it. It was just crazy. We have a lot of coffee here in the DC area, but it's nothing
like the West Coast.
Yeah. So we just
kind of a culture thing.
Yeah. So we just did a lot of exploring and eating and drinking our way through the city. I was able to get almond milk lattes everywhere we went. It was the nicest thing ever. I was like, we need this where we live. Stat. So, yeah.
Sounds like it was awesome.
Yes, it was. How was your New Year's? Well, that's not to say either. Before we did that, we had Russ from the Domestic Man and one of our paleo team review members over for a New Year's PJ potluck. And we did some posting about that on Instagram and stuff as well. And that was a lot of fun.
That's why Russ looked like he was wearing pajamas. He was.
He was wearing pajamas.
I was like, why is Russ like so casual? Those pants look like pajama bottoms. What is up with this picture?
He told me that he actually owns like a one piece with a cape.
And now the next question is, why didn't he wear them?
I know, because Janie, his wife, who's just so awesome and sweet and nice. You met her, right?
No, I have not.
You didn't meet them? She didn't come to the release party? Anyway, Janie is just like one of the sweetest people ever. She's like Heather. Like, she and Heather get along really well, and you loved Heather.
I did love... Hi, Heather! Do you listen? I don't know. Does Heather listen?
I'm sure.
Heather, I hope you listen, because I'm saying hi.
Heather from Virginia for our Hunter-Gatherers lives in the same vicinity as Russ and Janie. Not super close, but not far. And so they get together often, and Janie's just super nice, and, you know, like, she insists on doing my dishes when they come over and things like that. Like, she's just very nice. So Janie was packing Russ's superhero jammies, and evidently Russ had a hernia. Like, you know Stacey's going to take photos. I cannot be in this jammy photo, so... For what that's worth, I told him he would have been way cooler in Superman jammies.
You know, I probably would have looked at the photo and been like, awesome jammies, as opposed to, why does Russ look like he's wearing, like, these pajamas?
Yeah. It was a pajama party.
It would have been like, oh, it's a pajama party. Yes. Got it.
It's our new tradition. That's not the first time we've done it. And I like just staying at home and snuggling with the kids and being in PJs, and worked out really well. So, and we did like a potluck style kind of thing. Like, everybody brought different dishes and we just kind of ate and drank our way through the evening until finally it was time to put the children to bed.
Well, I think we went to bed at 9:30.
Oh, devil.
Might have been 10. And the kids went to bed at their normal time. And then I was up with my youngest, had to go potty in the middle of the night. It was like 12:30 and I got up and then I couldn't fall back asleep because like all of the fireworks like all over my neighborhood were going off and I wasn't in a deep sleep anymore. So I was just like listening to the crackle and it eventually faded and I fell back asleep. I haven't stayed up till midnight since before, like the year before I was pregnant with my oldest. So it's been like 8 years since I've stayed up till midnight for New Year's. I think I stopped because I always got sick if I did. Like, I would stay up till midnight and then I'd wake up with like a flu or a strep throat or, you know, something. And, you know, I realize now it's sleep and the immune system and how they're linked and important and stuff. Yeah, so I think we were pretty boring over here. But we did, on the 3rd, hire a babysitter, and my mother-in-law, who's visiting us, she's actually going home tomorrow morning. She's been here for 3 weeks. And my husband and I went and saw The Hobbit. which was so awesome. I think it's like the, well, clearly it's the first movie I've seen in 2014, but I think I saw like two movies in all of 2013. So it had been, I think the last time we saw a movie was like in August. So it was really fun. And I'm a huge like Peter Jackson fan, and I just always loved Tolkien's books. And then I just love what Peter Jackson has done with them. So it was awesome. It was super fun. And I had totally junky popcorn, as I do twice a year when I go to a movie.
I was going to say, as we mentioned in the last
episode. I've mostly been working. I'm working on some new projects that I'm not ready to talk to anybody about, but had a lot of meetings and just sort of, you know, working, but also at the same time at a slower pace, going to bed early. My husband and I went for our New Year's workout last Thursday, and I can straighten my arms today, but I couldn't until today.
That's how you know it's working.
Without intense pain. I had, especially my right, because I'm right-handed, so my left arm is just so much stronger, because it's like put six bags of groceries in my left arm so I can work the house keys with my right type thing. And so I was lifting the same weight and doing the same number of reps with each side. So my right side was just like freaking out, which would be the technical term. And my legs were sore the first and second day. My arms were sore the second and third day. And my right arm just ceased. I couldn't straighten it, but without intense pain. And so we've been doing a lot of walking, and I've been doing a lot of stretching, and just sort of waiting for that, for our muscles to recover before we stress them out again, because I know better than to jump back into a workout before my body's recovered. And so I'm going to be able to do something, I think, a little bit more challenging tomorrow, but it was intense. I'm being teased mercilessly by the fitness instructor who Facebook friended me like that afternoon. And it was a good time. So I'm looking forward to doing it again, but and hopefully not being sore for 4 days, because that was a bit excessive.
I was going to tell you that it actually hurts less if you go back and
Well, I haven't
muscles warm again.
Yeah, I've been walking and doing quite a lot of brisk walking, and I've been stretching. I took my kids practicing bike riding today and playing, and I've been trying not to baby it, but also not lifting weights for an hour straight. So I've been definitely doing the get the blood flowing and be active without ripping the muscles apart again.
Good plan.
Yeah. That was the part that I've been trying to avoid. I mean, we've been actually, because the New Year's resolution isn't necessarily what workout we're going to do, but creating the habit of working out together. So it's been more important that we, when we were far too sore to go back, we're like, well, let's go for a really, really brisk walk together. We happen to have babysitter staying with us right now. So let's just say, bye, Grandma. We'll be back in 45 minutes and, go do a brisk walk around our neighborhood. So, we've definitely still been active. And I've found doing some yoga at home to be really, really helpful, especially stretching out my hamstrings. But I was a little bit scared of like getting sort of 20 minutes into a class and then having like a muscle like seize or rip. Like my muscles were so tight on my right arm. I could feel them just like spasm. Like it was just like a rock. I was like, this would be awesome if it didn't hurt so much to have these like rock hard muscles in my arm. If it wasn't like pain because of the muscles.
Did you read my post on, advice when starting CrossFit? Because you're essentially starting a strength-based program. It would be the same.
Yeah, it's basically what I'm doing is it has a lot in common with CrossFit, because it's an hour-long workout that you move the whole time, so you're keeping your heart rate going the whole time, and you basically, it's still a lot of functional movement, but also a lot of foundational movements, and it's low weight, high rep, and you sort of alternate. You do upper body to exhaustion, lower body to exhaustion, upper. Clearly, it's not supposed to be to exhaustion. It just was for me and my poor husband. But you sort of alternate so that you're, and then you do a lot of compound movements that are full body. And I was like, woo, snatches! I know what these are. what I do, thanks to all my like CrossFit buds like you. But there was a lot in common, but the intensity is like clearly not the same as a CrossFit workout. And there wasn't any heavy weight, low rep, or sort of maxing out weight, type stuff in there. So there wasn't the strongman type workouts that you do. There wasn't anything like that. But yes. Have I read your post? No, maybe I should.
Yeah, you should. I mean, it's probably stuff you already know, but there's some good advice in there on, how to recover faster and, blah, blah, blah.
Do you find mineral salts baths to be really helpful?
Yes.
I found myself without mineral salts in the last week. I was like...
They sell Epsom salt for like $2 at Walmart.
Yes, I should go to Walmart. I have a Walmart like 5 minutes from my house. I think that is actually my... Walmart is the best place to get green plantains around where I live.
Fascinating.
And we eat a lot of green plantains in our house. And so it's, when I need plantains, because I know I'm going to have to cook pancakes soon, that's when we go to Walmart. And so tomorrow we have an inclement weather day. And I have like big plans of it, like a yoga class.
Interestingly, more starch either should be or is on that list, as well as more sleep, which sounds like you're doing. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I really learned my lesson getting the paleo approach to the printer. By the way, I should be holding it in my hands like Wednesday, I think.
Nice.
I know. So, although I was supposed to get a call today with the update because there's a 3-truck caravan that is supposed to be leaving the printer on its way to the warehouse. And I was like, find somebody there who can get a photograph of that for me because I just want a photo of 3 trucks, which are almost all sold already. 3 trucks filled with my books, like leaving the printer. I just think that's the most like amazing thing ever. And I want to see it. I want to see a photo of it. So, I was supposed to get an update today, but I didn't, which I'm assuming means it didn't leave because that's my assumption. But it was supposed to be done. It was supposed to be done today and it was supposed to leave today. So we'll see. Maybe it'll be tomorrow.
So perhaps. You done? I have a couple of announcements.
I totally think you should announce something like really, really huge and awesome that I got to preview and was like so, so cool and is like the awesomest thing ever and I can't wait for everybody to see it. It's going to be so awesome.
Your enthusiasm is more than I have for this project. So, well, first
That's
of all...
That's because you're tired. So I'm sleeping.
First of all, my first announcement is that I have a couple of events coming up that everybody should know about. I put them in the blog and the newsletter. Again, if people haven't subscribed to either Sarah or my newsletter, you should go to our website and do that. We have a lot of information that we provide on a weekly basis. We don't spam bot you. It's really helpful. And all 3 of my events were in there if you're trying to find me, including the previous book signings, which people were like, I didn't know you were coming. And I'm like, well, you're obviously not paying attention then, people. So anyway, the first one is at... Whole Foods Virginia Beach. It will be just myself and our team member Katie, and I don't know if I'm going to rope anyone into being drive with me. Normally I could pull Amy into something like that, but I just spent a whole lot of time with her, so she's probably done with me for a while. but Matt and the boys are not able to go, so unless like my sister or somebody else wants to go with me, it'll just be me and Katie at the Whole Foods Virginia Beach, and I'll be doing at least a book signing, but I think they want me to participate in a cooking demo and helping people find paleo snacks within the store and stuff like that. So if you're interested, there's information through our meetup group, meetup.com, and you can just type in paleo parents and we'll pop up on that event. Then there's also the Chris Kresser book signing the Monday after this airs. I think that's the 13th. at 7 or 7:30 p.m. at CrossFit Metro Center in D.C. And again, that's on the meetup.com group as well. And I'm sure Monica will put links in the show notes. And then third but not last, the domestic man, Russ, and I, and Matt as well, I believe I've successfully talked him out of his social anxiety, to help do a cooking demo, because otherwise it's just going to be me telling Russ what to do, because I'm not good at all in the kitchen except at managing things. So the cooking demo is going to be kind of like a kick your year off, right? And we're going to do some basic paleo recipes, like how to make zucchini noodles. And there's also a recipe for blueberry bundt cake. I think that I'm really good at making bundt cake, and it might just be my grandmother's like cast iron bundt cake pan that I have and love, but we tested this recipe already for the third cookbook, and it's really awesome. So we're going to serve that. So if you want some unique recipes, I think Russ is doing a new recipe for roasted cauliflower, and then I'm doing the new recipe for the bundt cake, and then we're going to do some basic stuff like a zucchini ragu. So if you want to come out and cook with us and hang out and watch us questions and hear me crack jokes in an awkward cricket silent sort of way, I hope that we will see you. That's later in January. Again, you can find that through the meetup.com group. And hopefully it's successful enough that we can do like a series. We want to do like a basic paleo cooking series, but we have to show Sur La Table that we can get enough people in on a first one. So if you're not local, but you know someone that's local and thinking about paleo, or thinking they can't do paleo, or thinking they don't know how to make paleo foods, or it's too hard, or any of the millions of things that you hear, this would be a really good opportunity to kind of scoot them in that direction and show them that it's easy, and we'll be there to give the people hugs and tell them they can do it. So, okay, those are my announcements, which I always forget to do.
Which totally didn't have anything to do with the thing that I was...
No. Which is fine.
Getting all excited about.
Right. Just before I talk about the things.
Because I'm so excited about book sightings.
So the thing that Sarah is so excited about is what I talked about last week. Our ebook is going to be finished, as I promised. It will launch on Thursday. So it will be live either the day that you're downloading this podcast or the day before you download this podcast. And we will have a sale for 1 week only. I know that everybody does ebooks and then they like hike up the price and then they do sales like all the time and whatever. We're not doing that. We have specifically structured the book so that we can offer discount the first week. And we are hoping that a lot of the specific recommendation food vendors to fill your paleo pantry, you know, for transition and all that kind of stuff, will also give us some discounts included in that first week period, so that there's a benefit to the people who are kind of paying attention and signing up if they want to do that the first time. So the ebook is actually called Three Phase Paleo, and it's how to transition your family in three simple steps. And we really, really tried to make it all-encompassing for all families, all walks of life. Of course, individuals can apply the same techniques. It's just going to be way easier for you if you're an individual versus, you know, a family. Because a lot of the things that make it really difficult from Sarah and I's perspective is having kids. I mean, I think the decisions that you make as an adult are your own, and you can kind of navigate your own health and all that kind of stuff. But when you're bringing kids into the fold, it really complicates things and makes it difficult. And so Sarah and I talk a lot about the different things that our family did to transition to paleo. And essentially, we've just written it down. It's not, you know, there's no some secret decoder ring to like figuring this out. It really is just, you know, you have to take steps and you have to be consistent. And the guide is meant to help you with that. There's shopping guides, there's recommendations on convenience foods, there's over 70 recipes in the book, which are kind of, as Sarah said, our best ofs. We've pulled recipes from our blog, which are all the favorite, all the favorites from our fans. And then we've also put in some of the staples that we really love and use from both of our cookbooks. And we also have the pumpkin waffle recipe, which is an exclusive that I only gave to people who donated for Barbells for Boobs fundraiser earlier this year. That is also in there. So if you've been wanting to buy one of our books for, let's say, the bacon jam recipe, but just haven't been able to for whatever reason, you will get the opportunity when we launch this ebook at 50% off this week. So we're really hoping that it is helpful for people. And, you know, I think I mentioned before, the number one question that we get in our inbox is, okay, I understand why I should do paleo, but I have a really difficult time on how to do paleo with a family. Can you tell me how to do paleo with a family? And we can't just do that with 140 characters. We can't just do that with even a single blog post. You know, there's a whole lot of recommendations that we have from, you know, having fun in the kitchen with your family, cooking with your family, to, you know, being kind of strict and consistent if you make a decision, sticking with it. And all of those things and recommendations are put into a book so that people can figure out for themselves what they want to include when, but the basic steps of, okay, we recommend that you pull everything out of your house with certain ingredients in the first step because we think those are the most offending and you'll see the most benefit from removing them. And once you get kind of comfortable and you do that, then you're able to kind of move on to step two, which is, okay, now that you're ready, let's tackle what is paleo and how can we get your kitchen moving in that direction. And then once you understand that basic concept, then you can move on to the complicated stuff that Sarah and I embarrassingly talk about every week, like bone broth and organ meats and seafood and sleep and lifestyle and relaxation and sunlight and all the things that are important. You know, if we hit you with all of that at once, it's overwhelming and I couldn't have done it either. Paleo wasn't what it is today. And my understanding of what paleo was the Lauren Cordain version. I didn't even know about half the stuff that I know about now. And so I think it's really important that people have a tool that tells them, like, it's okay to take this slow. It's okay. Just keep moving in the right direction and eventually you'll get there. And whether that takes you a week or a year for step one, as long as you're on step one and you're being consistent and moving towards a specific direction, I really think that this tool can help a variety of people. And that's my hope. It makes me really, really nervous. I think I mentioned that last week. Like, we've never done anything like this. And it's not just a little ebook. Like, it's at this point, I think 110.
It's 110 pages.
Yeah. And there's still pages that we're adding, like the indexes and the reference sections and stuff need to be built out. The one that you saw. So I think it's going to be like 115 pages. And the recipes don't take 2 pages. Like a lot of ebooks, you hear a big number. That's because the recipes are taking 2 pages. Our recipes are 1 page. So, you know, it's a lot, and we're trying to really make it like a one-stop shop for people.
And it's beautifully designed and it's so well organized. I mean, that for me is one of the things that a lot of ebooks sort of miss out without having professional editors and professional designers to help pull it all together, is you kind of miss out on that person who makes it organized and makes it visually organized as well as like just logical. And you guys, I think because you're pros now working on your third book, you understand how that goes together. And you've made an ebook that looks like a professional, like it looks like a real book. Does that make sense? I don't want to bash all those other ebooks out there because there are lots of amazing ebooks. But, you know, so often an ebook is, you know, a fancy Word document and yours is like a real book. And I think when people see it, they're going to be just really blown away at what an amazing resource it is, how well organized it is, and how it's going to help people really navigate transition. It's going to really take a lot of the effort and questions and uncertainty out of like what to do, what's the most important thing, how do I, you know, what's a better option for this food, how do I replace this? How do I deal with this situation? I think your book answers all of those questions. I think it's just going to be an amazing resource. And as I told you earlier today, a resource that is not out there. I mean, I have not ever seen anything like this for helping families transition to paleo. I think it's just going to be so helpful for so many people. It's really an amazing project, and I don't think you should be nervous about putting it out there at all.
Thank you. Well, it definitely was quite an undertaking. And I didn't want just a Word document. You know, not, like you said, not to bash other ebooks, but one of the reasons that it's taken us a year to get this together is just because I was really adamant that it needed to be visual for people, because I understand that, you know, we're all busy, especially if you have a family. Like, it's pretty difficult to digest information that, you know, is super textual, especially when you're talking about just simple things like, how do I pack my kids' lunch? You know, so we tried to really address a lot of that. And it's not just regurgitated information from Eat Like a Dinosaur. It's a completely new set of information. There's information in Eat Like a Dinosaur that's not included in this book because it's not necessarily specific to transition. And then there's information in this book that's certainly not in Eat Like a Dinosaur because we really didn't focus on transition in Eat Like a Dinosaur. We kind of were selling paleo and then we're like, okay, and now if you've decided to do it, here's some recipes and things that we do. But this is really specific to transition, although it's obviously helpful for people who are, you know, still not 100% or whose, you know, children aren't interested or whatever. I mean, and there's 70 recipes in there that's all in one place. So even if you're just interested in having our website recipes in a place where you don't have to go search on your phone while you're cooking for things, like you can, you know, download it. It'll be available as a PDF that you can put in a Kindle app or you can put on your tablet or do whatever or your laptop so that, you know, you can pull it up in the kitchen or wherever. And it's also fitted to be an 8.5 by 11 book so that you can take it to a printer and have it bound if you want to. So anyway, given that this week is all about transitioning family for us, I thought that maybe we could focus our podcast questions on transitioning the family as well, and kind of give people a heads up that if this is the kind of information that you're interested in and you like hearing and you want to learn more, then definitely our ebook, our new ebook, Three Phase Paleo, would be the thing to check out. And so, again, this podcast is live. That means that the book is currently on sale, 50% off. It's normally $22.95, so you're getting it for like $11.50, half off, and that includes the whole 115-page book or whatever it ends up being, all 70 recipes, including the exclusive pumpkin. Like, I'm telling you, those pumpkin waffles are awesome. I don't know if you made them, Sarah, but I know you like my other waffles, and the pumpkin ones are amazing too.
Yeah, I've only ever made your other waffles. I have drooled over the pumpkin ones, like over the pictures, and then I need a new waffle maker before I make waffles again.
Yeah, and then so you get all that, and then hopefully we're working on getting a lot of discount coupons in that book as well, and all that'll be on the website when we launch the book. So if you're interested, check it out, and this really supports us bloggers. Like I know it seems like. Well, maybe it seems, maybe it doesn't seem like we bloggers live this glamorous life and we have endless amounts of income to sit around and postulate on the internet, but that's really not how it goes. And we choose to not have Google Ads on our website because I don't want to ever risk someone seeing a Twix bar advertisement or something on my site. So projects like this help our family spend more time together because it means that we get to hire people who help us with the administrative side of things. And, you know, if you love, you know, the work that we're doing, and even Sarah with her books or our other cookbooks, the best, most awesome thing that you can do is support us financially. And, you know, it might seem like $11.50 isn't, you know, that big of a deal to you, or it might seem like $11.50 is a really big deal to your finances. But when more than a couple people make that purchase, it really goes a long way towards making sure that, you know, we can continue to hire assistants and team members on the site so that, you know, we can spend time together. And I know, Sarah, it's the same way for you. Like, neither one of us pretend to be doing all of this by ourselves because it just would literally be impossible and unfair to our family. So we really appreciate all the support that you've given us so far. And we hope that, you know, if you do purchase this book, that you like it and you find it worthwhile, and spreading the word is the best thing that you can do. And if you're a blogger, we'll also be having an affiliate program after the first week discount. Unfortunately, we can't offer both a 50% discount and give our affiliates part of that money, but if you're interested in signing up, we would strongly encourage you to do so, because after the first week, we will go live with an affiliate program if you're interested in reviewing and sharing the book yourself. So, wow, that was some marketing spam, but it's done. It's weird because we haven't really been talking about it because I didn't know if it was really going to come together, you know, and it's...
I totally understand. I mean, because I have a couple of projects on the go that I'm not ready to announce because I'm waiting to make sure that, you know, it does all come together and there's, you know, like things, you know, things that need to be done before it's for sure. And I totally understand that, not wanting to talk about something until it's there. So I get it. And then that means you've got all that built up stuff to say. So this will be me in about a month and a half blabbering on about my new project.
Cool.
Just to, you know, throw out that teaser right there.
So I am super stoked because I have been having some wacko sleep lately from my east-west coast trips. And prior to that, because I'm an idiot sometimes, two days before I left for California, it was New Year's and I stayed up till midnight. Then the night before I left for California, on like I had to get up at 4 a.m. for the plane, Matt got tickets to a show. Like a, you guys don't know what Kennedy Center is, but it's like our Broadway, the DC show. We saw Flashdance, which was
fun,
awesome, but the show was really late and we didn't get home till almost midnight. So I stayed up way past my bedtime two nights in a row, and then I went to California, got up early, completely jacked my sleep schedule, came back on a red eye, which I didn't sleep on because it was only 5 hours and I was afraid to take a melatonin because I was afraid it was going to mess me up and blah, blah, blah. So now my body is
completely confused.
And so I specifically asked you, Sarah, if you could do a science segment on sleep to, you know, remind me and everyone else out there who might have had some crazy holiday hours that, you know, now that it's New Year's, one of the priorities should not just be eating right. It should also be living a good lifestyle. And part of that, as we talk about regularly, is good sleep. Mm-hmm. So, you ready for some science?
I'm totally ready for some science. Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. So I know that sleep doesn't have anything to do with transition, which is what we're going to be talking about in the questions and answers, but it is a basic like paleo lifestyle aspect that I think is something that often gets underrated. I think a lot of people say, yeah, you know, I need more sleep. And then they don't actually do anything about it until you kind of end up in a situation where you're so chronically sleep deprived that your health is suffering and you have no choice but to address sleep as one of the, you know, aspects contributing to that health problem. And so because, you know, Stacey mentioned being sort of sleep deprived from this like crazy week of not getting enough sleep, I thought it'd be really interesting to talk about a couple of papers out of a Finnish research group. They've done some clinical trials that specifically targeting the question of sleep recovery. Now, the model that they're looking at is the person who doesn't get enough sleep during the week and then tries to sleep in on the weekend and catch up. And so what they've done is they've put, you know, young to middle-aged, healthy men on this like sleep schedule where they're getting 4 hours a night for five nights, and then they get 8 hours for two nights. And one of the things that they've done, they've actually done three papers with data from these patients looking at various metabolic effects, hormone effects. Very, very interesting to me because I'm so interested in the immune system and how things like how we eat and the lifestyle choices make impact our immune system. They've looked at the immune system and they've actually looked at gene expression and especially genes that are related to how the immune system is functioning. So they have a very, very interesting paper from 2009, and I'll actually give the links to Monica. These are free papers that everybody can access. I'll give links to Monica so she can put them in the show notes, that looks at the different types of immune cells, their numbers and whether or not they're activated, and some of the signaling molecules. I think we've talked about cytokines on this show before. These are molecules that are sort of messenger molecules. They're secreted by some types of cells. They're bind to receptors on other types of cells. And they're a way that the immune system cells communicate with each other. And they're used to ramp up an immune response or increase inflammation. They're also used to help control it and ramp it down. So what these researchers did is they looked at a bunch of different markers of immune activation and inflammation. And what they showed is that a huge subset of the immune system is stimulated by lack of sleep or by insufficient sleep. This isn't even just like pulling an all-nighter. This is going to bed too late all week because you're working on some project late at night. So you don't crawl into bed until, you know, 2 a.m. and then you have to get up at 6. And they found, you know, huge increases in markers of inflammation, immune cell activation, things like B cells, which are the cells in your body that secrete antibodies, C-reactive protein, which is a general marker of inflammation, and a bunch of pro-inflammatory cytokines and signaling molecules. They also found that some cells were decreased. For example, natural killer cells, which are really, really important cells whose job it is to find cells of yours within your body that are infected by a virus or bacteria, and then deal with that cell. So what they actually do is they cause that cell to go into what's called apoptosis, which is a type of controlled cell suicide. So they're actually patrolling the body and dealing with infected cells. And that's a really, really important aspect of controlling infection within our bodies. Those cells go down after sleep deprivation, which is a very, very likely contributor to the increased susceptibility of infection that you see when people are sleep deprived. There's also a variety of other studies that show similar type immune activation even after a single night of insufficient sleep. So this is, you know, a pretty consistent. There are several dozen studies that sort of confirm various aspects of this. Now, what makes this paper so fascinating to me is because they actually looked at recovery. So then you get, you know, Saturday and Sunday, you get 8 hours sleep both days. And as a person who kind of, there's many, many of us who have done this schedule at some point in our lives or are doing this schedule now because we're, you know, working really hard. Maybe we're working and going to school, or we're trying to, you know, balance really too many things on our plate because sleep is being sacrificed in order to get everything else done. And we tend to start feeling pretty good by Sunday afternoon. You know, we've had 2 good nights sleep and we're getting ready for the next week. But what these researchers showed was that some of the markers of inflammation do recover in 2 days. But some really important ones, especially when it comes to immune and autoimmune disease, do not. And in particular, a cytokine called interleukin 17, which stimulates a type of T lymphocyte called a helper T cell 17 or TH 17 cells, stays up even after 2 nights of getting an appropriate amount of sleep. And this is really important because TH 17 cells are being implicated in autoimmune diseases and immune diseases left, right, and center. Pretty much every time you look at an immune or autoimmune-related disease and you look at what TH17 cells are doing, they are abnormally high. And it's a fairly newly characterized part of the immune system. It's only been understood for a couple of years. And so it's really like the new hot topic research in immune diseases. And so this puts a pretty strong link between sleep deprivation and the immune system. What these researchers were actually looking at was tying the link that is seen in epidemiological studies between sleep deprivation and cardiovascular disease. And this is what they're attributing that link to. They then went on and did another paper that was just released this fall that looked at gene activation, and they found dozens and dozens of genes that control various aspects of the immune system are affected by sleep deprivation. And it typically, they're either up or they're down. The end result is that explains these changes in cell numbers. Some cells are increased in numbers. Some cells are not increased in numbers, but they're increased in their activation. They're basically turned on by sleep deprivation. So the really interesting question is, okay, so if 2 days isn't enough, how long is? And I think that's probably the question that Stacey's most interested in hearing me answer. And the
in combination with seafood and bone broth, of course.
Right, of course. Clearly, all of these studies have been done. The answer is we don't know. And that's a horrible answer to have to tell people, but it's often the case with scientific investigation is you get so far and then you hit the point where you're like, oh, nobody has studied that yet. What my professors used to tell me when I was an undergrad, when I would ask those kinds of questions, is that would make a great PhD thesis, Sarah. So I apparently have come up with ideas for like 300 great PhD theses in my time. Only one of which I did. So the answer is we don't know. Longer than 2 days is the answer. I think what this type of research shows, the idea behind it is really to show that, you know, sleep needs to be a priority every day. And, you know, clearly there are times in our lives where we just don't have control over these things. And then my recommendation is focus on sleep and get as much as you can until you feel great, and then keep getting a good amount after that. And know that not putting sleep high up on the priority list can have a really huge impact on your immune system. That means you can be doing everything else right. Your diet can be perfect. You can be, you know, active and outside and, you know, doing meditation and yoga and doing everything else. And if your sleep is not there, your wheels are still going to fall off the bus eventually. So I know that was sort of a unfortunate that answer in the sense that I don't know how many more days of sleep you're going to need, Stacey. But I think it's a really interesting field of study and one that I think is going to increase in terms of the amount of data coming out of it as these researchers are using more and more sophisticated approaches for quantifying the effect of sleep loss on human health.
Or, in other words, just keep being deficient until the ebook is out and then sleep for a month.
Right. Right. That's clearly what I said.
Right.
I said there is a time and a place, something, something, did I say? A time and a place. And then sleep for a month or two.
Cool. So now that we know how to be healthy with sleeping, maybe we should answer a few family questions with the limited time we have left since we talked conversation for way too long again. Clearly you and I just need to have more phone calls more often so that we're less chatty in the beginning of the show.
I'd go for that, except I'd never get anything done.
I know. We're too busy. We always end up talking for too long. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
All right, so our first question is from Tanya from Reno, Nevada. Hi, Stacey and Sarah. My family have been following a paleo lifestyle for about a year and a half. I am an occupational therapist, and I work with children with a variety of issues, but particularly those with feeding, sensory, and behavior problems. I recommend to all my families who are open to a gluten and dairy-free diet to get Eat Like a Dinosaur or go to your websites.
Thank you.
My particular question is how to approach a paleo type of diet with families who are vegan. I am fairly certain that a lack of animal protein is not helping with behavior and sensory issues. I hope to complete an NTP or nutrition consultant program eventually, but since that is not my degree, sometimes I have a hard time getting parents to listen to my nutritional advice. I respect both of your opinions and insight very much, and any thoughts you have would be greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for all your great work.
This is a tough one.
Well, I thought that you might have some really good insight because you were a vegetarian.
Vegan's way harder than vegetarian, though, because you're going to have eggs and dairy on vegetarian, and depending on what kind of vegetarian you are.
You might eat fish. Or, yeah.
Yeah. So the first question, I do get this question sometimes, probably more common than other people, because I was a vegetarian and I have vegan family members. The question that I ask, that I would encourage everyone to ask, is why are they vegan or vegetarian? For some people, the answer is religion or ethics, in which case I wouldn't even go there. Like, it's, you know, everybody has a right to their own personal beliefs and opinions. And despite the fact that I think that soy fields and corn fields are ruining the earth so that we can no longer use those fields over and over again, the way that pastured animals reuse fields over and over again, that's not a conclusion that I had when I was a vegetarian, and it's not something that I would have listened to someone tell me. So, you know, my personal approach is not to try to change someone's ethics or religion. However, if someone is vegan or vegetarian for reasons of health, that they believe that following a vegan or vegetarian diet is the healthy way to do it, then you can kind of approach conversations and pull up resources and information and blog posts and books and, you know, all the different sources of material out there. Denise Minger's new book, Food Pyramid, which we will have her on the show in the near future to kind of debunk the China study. Things like that are really good materials to kind of start a conversation with someone if they believe that vegan or vegetarianism is the best health approach for them. Then you can have kind of a discussion. But so let's say that the reason is religious. Then what I try to do when I'm feeding a vegan family member is incorporate more non-animal fats, specifically coconut oil, palm shortening, palm oil are the things that we use and we cook with. And, you know, it's really essential to, if you're having a vegetable rich diet, for you to have enough fat in your diet to then make those vitamins fat soluble and be absorbed and utilized by your body properly. What I find with a lot of people is that they're making, you know, juice smoothies and, or vegetable smoothies and juices and all these kinds of things, but they're not putting any fat in them. And then all those nutrients that you're eating are pretty much running right through you because there's no way for your body to absorb it. So incorporating things like avocado, coconut oil, palm shortening, palm oil, are really great ways to start. Obviously, if they're vegetarian rather than vegan, really encouraging the use of pastured eggs in mass quantities is good as well. You know, there you can still make vegan and vegetarian broth. It's not going to be nearly nutrient rich, but you can take leftover vegetables that you would normally compost and put them in a broth. And that can still be really soothing and helpful nutrient-wise. It's basically pre-digested nutrients that are going to be more easily and readily absorbed by the body. The tough part is protein. You know, there really isn't a good vegan protein source in a paleo diet because everything is bound in carbohydrates. You know, legumes, no matter what kind they are going to be bound in carbohydrates. So I think the most important thing is to kind of focus on more of the raw vegan side of the approach and discourage the use of processed soy products like Morningstar hot dogs, and just really encourage people to kind of eat real foods as much as they can, you know, kind of a Weston A. Price Foundation approach to if they're going to eat grains, but especially legumes, just soaking and sprouting those legumes so that they can disrupt their gut as least as possible and get some protein. Although, you know, everybody needs to recognize that your body is not able to utilize that protein properly when it's bound up in a bunch of carbohydrates. So, and then I think really focusing on some of the other nutrient-dense foods that are available on the vegan diet. So that would be like fermented foods, seaweed and sea vegetables, coconut, a lot of coconut milk, coconut oil, coconut flour. I'm trying to think. You got anything else, Sarah?
I liked the sea vegetables. Fermented, especially, you know, it's very common to ferment cruciferous vegetables. So cruciferous vegetables tend to be some of the most nutrient-dense vegetables. But things like beets, kale, collards, Brussels sprouts. Unfortunately, you wouldn't be cooking them with bacon if you were vegan, though, huh? Because they really are good cooked with bacon.
They've got some new product out now that I think is vegan where they take coconut and flakes and flavor it like bacon. I don't know what they put in that stuff, but I mean...
That's interesting. Nutritional yeast.
Yeah.
The other book that... I mean, I guess the other thing I would say is there are a lot of, bloggers within the paleo movement who were vegan for a time and got very, very sick being vegan, or had, tried to go vegan in order to deal with specific health issues and it made everything worse. And you'll actually see that as a very common theme within the paleo movement. And so those people's stories can be really, really powerful for, like Stacey said, somebody who's vegan for ethical or religious reasons, it's sort of a difficult thing you don't have the same discussion. But somebody who's vegan because they are trying to be healthy and that they have, heard from somewhere that being a vegan is the best way to deal with specific health issues, that's where you can have a much more dynamic conversation about the nutrients that are deficient in a vegan diet, the fat-soluble vitamins and vitamin B12, the amino acids that the body doesn't convert very efficiently that are deficient in a vegan diet. That's where you can start to really have that type of discussion. One book that I really like to recommend is The Vegetarian Myth by Liara Keith. I think, she's also somebody who had a lot of health issues because of nutritional deficiencies from being a vegan. And she actually, in her book, discusses things like cows using land instead of farms and how growing an acre of corn feeds two animals in a concentrated animal feeding operation, whereas 2 acres of wild, land can also feed 2 cows without destroying the soil and taking away the trees and the homes for all the other animals that could live on that acre. So her book is a really great introduction to tackling both the nutrient deficiency aspect, but also some of the ethical aspects of veganism. So I think that's all I have to add.
So essentially we're saying it's really hard.
It's tough. It's tough. I mean, and it really depends on why that person's vegan and what they're struggling with and whether or not they're looking for a different option or not. I mean, being vegan it's more than just a diet. It's just like paleo is more than just a diet and we incorporate a lot of lifestyle aspects. Veganism also incorporates actually kind of the same lifestyle aspects. There's a lot of philosophy that's extremely similar between veganism and a paleo diet. And I know that isn't necessarily obvious to a lot of people, but I really see there as being far more overlap between our approaches, our goals, and our overall philosophies than there are differences. And so I think that it's definitely a tricky situation, but there are some good resources to point people to, especially if they're coming to you because they're struggling with behavioral issues with their children, sending them to some of the paleo blogs of people who had experience being vegan and are now paleo, can be really helpful. So our next question is from Sarah from Rochester, Minnesota. MN?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You should know that. That's where Monica lives.
Minnesota, I mean just Rochester, Minnesota.
I don't know Rochester, but yeah, MN is.
Well, this is, okay, yeah. I don't know where Rochester is. I know Rochester, New York, but presumably Rochester is one of those cities that there's like five of them or more. Anyways, I had a very long question, and I'm just going to read the part of the question I think that was really, really relevant to what we're talking about today, which is sort of transition and transition with families. Hi, my name is Sarah, though all my friends call me Joe. I listen to your podcast and love it. I recently found out that I have celiac disease, and even though my son's tests came back negative, I refuse to believe that those tests are absolute or that he will never develop the disease. So I'm now in the process of changing both of our diets. I am planning to do the autoimmune protocol starting in January 2014 for myself, but I'm hoping to have my son as close to paleo as I can. I contacted his school, and they will not offer any gluten-free options unless I have a note from the doctor, so I will have to make all of his lunches at home. He has no access to a microwave at school, so I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for meals he can take that an 8-year-old would like that don't need reheating. And I thought, we pack lunches all the time. We've probably got lots of ideas. You want to kind of do this one as a rapid fire?
Sure. Roast beef wrapped around avocado.
Grass-fed hot dogs cut into pieces.
Ham with mustard rolled up. Maybe some pickles if your kids like them.
Cold leftover chicken or homemade chicken nuggets or chicken strips.
Trail mix. Any nuts your kids like, any dried fruit your kids like, and if you're feeling super generous, add in a couple chocolate chips.
Ooh. Chopped up veggies, carrot sticks, celery, cucumber, broccoli if he likes raw broccoli. You can even do like blanched broccoli so it's a little bit softer. I know my kids like that a little bit better.
Apple chips.
How about fresh fruit?
Banana chips.
Oh, yeah, I love banana chips. U.S. Wellness Meats has a ton of grass-fed sort of deli lunch meat type things. One of my kids' favorites is their bologna.
U.S. Wellness Meats pork rinds.
Have you tried them yet?
I did at Danielle's house in San Francisco, and then I proceeded to order 5 bags when Meats had its sale today.
I may have to do that tomorrow because their sale's still on. And that totally distracted me from coming up with a new idea. Hard-boiled eggs.
Plantain chips.
And see how boring my kids are. My kids like cold scrambled eggs in their lunches.
Paleo kits or homemade jerky or U.S. Wellness Meats meat sticks.
Ooh, meat sticks is a good one. My youngest loves canned salmon with a fork. I know that's like a little bit messy for some kids' lunches, but she loves it. And her teacher has never complained about me sending her canned salmon.
We make tuna salad and salmon salad. So if your kid doesn't want just canned fish, you can mix it up with some paleo mayo. They actually have some brands that you don't have to make yourself that I'm finding now that are shelf stable if you're worried about that. But if you have an ice pack you can put in your kid's lunch. My kids love, well, tuna, Cole in particular loves tuna salad and salmon salad.
Sea snacks.
You got me on that one. That was my next one. Kale chips. And you can buy or make your own. And maybe Monica will put some links in the show notes to some of these products, but also to some of the recipes, because half of the things that we're talking about here, you don't have to buy. You can make. They're either in our transition book or they're in Eat Like a Dinosaur. I know, Sarah, you've got a lot of these on your website.
Yeah. You know, what about something like, you know, if her son's having issues with the transition, something like a muffin made with almond flour or, you know, even a cookie that's made with an unrefined sugar and, you know, nuts and or seed flour just to make him feel like he's got a treat.
homemade fruit and nut bars or Lara bars?
I think I'm running out of steam.
Grain-free granola, and then you can put in, like, coconut milk or coconut milk yogurt with it, and then also a little container of dried fruit. That's my kid's favorite.
They can build
themselves a little parfait.
That's awesome. My kids actually really like, I put grain-free granola from Steve's Paleo Goods into their lunchboxes and a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
My kids are so like, they like things plain. So they really like, and they don't like to mix things very often. You didn't say holy guacamole.
I got a lot to go. Black olives, holy guacamole.
Black olives are one of my kids' favorites. I just put often just plain nuts. Like, I don't even go trail mixy. I just go, like, here's a few Brazil nuts.
Black olive tapenade, which is a recipe in both the Eat Like a Dinosaur and the ebook, is one of my kids' favorites, and it stays for a really long time in the fridge. And it's got a really good amount of healthy fats. It's a good sustaining food. Depending on when the meal takes place, you can make your own smoothies, or you can do naked smoothies are one of my kids' favorite treats. They're not just juiced, like the fiber is still in them. They're really thick fruit juices, or you can make them yourself with like coconut milk or something. That's another really great thing. That's more of like my kids going to soccer practice kind of food than a lunchbox food, but Epic bars are another really great one. Those are like a meal replacement. I like to do those at like the 2 o'clock snack time that they have, because I know it'll keep my kids going in a healthful way.
There's actually quite a few options now for sort of paleo-friendly snack bars or meal replacement bars. There's Cliff Kit bars, which are kind of like layer bars. There's AMRAP bars. There's Yelp. Am I saying that right? Yeah. Bars.
I think Epic bars are great specifically because they don't have nuts in them. And Finn's in a nut-free classroom. But all of those that you just mentioned, it really depends on like what your taste buds are, you know.
Yeah, so those are very different levels of sweetness. So, you know, it'll kind of depend on where you are in transition, what's going to work.
You said carrot sticks, right?
I did, yeah.
So my kids don't like plain carrot sticks, but if I include like a sun butter or holy guacamole with like apple slices or carrot sticks, they really like to dip. Like my kids are dippers. Your kids are plain people. My kids are dippers. So like ham needs mustard and carrot sticks need sun butter and black olive tapenade goes great with cucumber slices. Like my kids love to, you know, dip and smear and mix, and they're the kids that like if they had soda they would get a suicide. Like they just like you know, like they
say my kids are like the ones who like nothing on their plate to touch anything else and like everything to be like segregated in its own little area so it can't be, you know, tainted with the food next to it. What about paleo-friendly crackers? So I know we both have cracker recipes. My plantain crackers travel really, really well and are only like 3 ingredients. They're super easy to make. And then you could do the whole dipping thing.
And there's even recipes on both of our sites for bread, or like we have a graham cracker type recipe where you can even make like a faux peanut butter and jelly sandwich with sun butter or almond butter and, you know, either homemade apple butter, or you can find fruit juice sweetened jam at the store. That's really great for transition as well. I like your idea on a previous show that we had about your daughter writing a list of foods that she really liked and your daughter writing a list of foods that she absolutely didn't want to see in her lunchbox. And then as the year went on, you chose from the list of foods that she liked. And then when she came to you later and said, I didn't want seaweed in my lunchbox or whatever it was, you were like, well, it's right here on your list of approved foods.
I think it was green beans she was complaining about. Yeah, and I actually had her segregate it too. We talked about proteins, vegetables, and vegetables and fruits and fats. So we had 4 different lists. And I try and include 1 food from each list in her lunch every day. So she always has something that we call a protein. Her staple is grass-fed hot dogs. And she always has a vegetable, and her staple is carrot and celery sticks. She always has a fruit. Her staple is cut up apple. And then she always has a fat, and that's the thing that actually tends to be the most different from day to day. But her favorites are things like, you know, nuts, seeds, olives. And I mean, she's definitely a creature of habit, sort of the same way I am. She likes to eat the same thing day in and day out. And I get it because I'm very much the same. But that list has always been, you know, very, very useful for us because we can go to it and say, well, no, you did have blueberries on there and you didn't eat your blueberries. So you need to eat them. The rule in our house is you have to finish your lunch before you can have an afternoon snack. And so, well, you got to eat them because that was on the list and you have to eat that before you can have, you know, whatever it is that we're offering for afternoon snack that day.
Cool. I think we sufficiently tackled that one.
All right. So we have one last question, and I actually think it's a really great question to build on from Joe's question. This question's from Ashley. I was hoping y'all could help me with a situation regarding my daughter and food choices. How do you handle the school environment? My daughter is 4 and in half-day preschool 5 days a week. The class does a community snack, which is not paleo and not very healthy. We have been sending a snack every day for my daughter to ensure she has nutritious food to eat. We also provide the teacher with a box of caveman cookies and organic lollipops as alternatives for her when there is a birthday. Our daughter doesn't have any diagnosed medical conditions that we are treating. She is sensitive to sugar, gluten, and artificial food colors, but not to a debilitating extent. We are trying to avoid her developing the chronic conditions her father and I struggle with. It has come to our attention that it is a problem in the classroom. We were assured that our food choices would not be a problem when we enrolled her, but in reality, that's different. I just left a conference where the teacher argued with me about it and said we were making our daughter stick out and be uncomfortable. Switching schools or pulling her and homeschooling is not an option right now. If things get worse, we will have to reconsider many things, but our first option is making it work at our school. How do you approach teachers to where they understand and actively support your decision? As in, not just following your requests, but also not allowing your child to feel ostracized. How do you teach your child that it's okay to be different and to instill the confidence where he/she is bothered by being different? I appreciate any help and advice you can give me. I'm devastated that my daughter is struggling because of our non-mainstream choices. It has never been a problem before now, and I'm really lost as to how we should handle it. Thank you, Ashley.
So, first of all, my heart really goes out for Ashley. I got a little choked up reading this because there's nothing I hate hearing more than children feeling ostracized. Like, it's something that I've personally witnessed in my children, and I think I told the story once before about Cole getting really upset about Valentine's Day and revealed to me, like, 8 p.m. the day before Valentine's Day that he didn't want to give his friend stickers and pencils because he didn't want to stick out. And I ran to the store and got him pink Annie's fruit snacks because it made him feel normal. And it was a total concession that I was willing to make. And I think all parents need to just, you know, have an understanding for the real societal impacts that this choice and lifestyle has on our children. And I think I really commend Ashley for, first of all, recognizing and trying to solve this problem, but also not running away from it. Like, I see so often, especially on our Facebook page, that when someone has an issue with something, that often the recommendation from other people on the page is, well, just walk away or just homeschool. And as much as I wholeheartedly support people's decision to homeschool, I think it's really important to try to teach our children and for ourselves to learn to problem solve. Like, that's just a life skill. And so, you know, running away from this problem isn't going to solve the fact that ultimately it exists. So I can't say that I've experienced this problem, but maybe that's because of the way that I approach it. So I can say the way that we approach it. I would say, Sarah and I have talked before on the show that none of our children have been diagnosed with a specific medical condition that would guarantee a doctor to write a note about not eating gluten. For example, none of the five of our children between us have an anaphylactic reaction to gluten, nor do any of them have celiac disease, which is really the medical paperwork that the school is asking for. Like, those are the two things that would be considered a true allergy. Everything else is an intolerance. So what we did do, Sarah, remember in your case, your daughter had medical conditions when she consumed, you know, quote unquote, bad foods. And then you stopped feeding her those bad foods. And then you went to the doctor and you said, look, we've cut out these foods and now my daughter doesn't have all these things happening to her anymore. And the doctor was like, okay, well, clearly she's intolerant to gluten. And you were able to work with that doctor and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, our doctor would write us a note in a second just based on my oldest had chronic constipation and was on Miralax until we cut gluten out of her diet. And when we cut gluten out, she went off Miralax and her bowel movements normalized. And she also started sleeping through the night, and she was 4 years old and had never slept through the night before. And that was way more than enough to get a diagnosis of gluten sensitivity in our pediatrician's eyes. My youngest, we had been doing some pretty invasive medical tests to figure out what was going wrong with her. She was having obstructive sleep apnea, and it turned out that it was caused by a bizarre combination of a malformation in her larynx and excessive acid reflux from both gluten and dairy, causing swelling in her larynx, so that the malformation in her epiglottis, when she happened to be in a rapid eye movement sleep and had lower muscle tone, would cause the epiglottis to flop over her trachea and obstruct her airway and cause obstructive sleep apnea. Like, that took, right there, took 2 years of crazy medical tests, as well as, you know, eventually elimination diet to figure out. And so, you know, for us, that in some ways is a little bit easier because there's such clear things to point to for a doctor. But a doctor, you know, a diagnosis of food sensitivity is, I mean, sometimes it's based on blood tests or other testing, but it's the majority of the time it's done based on the parent saying, my child has X reaction to X food, so I don't give them X food. You know, whether it's a rash or whatever else. I mean, that's how most allergies are reported. I mean, even, hey, my kid had hives after eating this, they're allergic. You typically don't need to then go do an allergy test to measure for antibodies against that food, except for in the case where you're not sure what food it is. And that's a diagnosis thing. That's not, you know, for a school. So, you know, and, you know, Ashley's talking about, you know, okay, it's not debilitating, but they do know that their daughter is sensitive to sugar, gluten, and artificial food colors. We use, I mean, we just say, I say allergic or I say food sensitivity, even though technically neither of my daughters are allergic. It's not technically an allergy, and they've been tested for allergies. It is not one. It is definitely a food sensitivity. You know, sometimes it's just easier to just couch it as an allergy. And then if the conversation expands, and certainly I had the expanded conversation with my daughter's teachers, you know, it's a sensitivity. These are the symptoms that they have. And, you know, I don't want, you know, my oldest daughter to have, you know, a horrible stomach ache. I don't want my youngest daughter to have such excessive acid reflux that she's choking on acid all night and I have to sleep, you know, sitting up in her bed so that she can sleep upright against my shoulder because she can't sleep lying down. I don't want to do that. I mean, and I'll have that conversation with the teachers. And I think explaining the reaction can actually help it not seem so much of a lifestyle choice and seem more like a health choice, which is what it, I mean, it's both. But, you know, if Ashley does know that her daughter has reactions, then, you know, there is a legitimate sensitivity to be talking about, even if it's not life-threatening. It's still a food sensitivity. Am I getting to...
Yeah, so I guess what I would add is that the specific approach that I have is being kind of really upfront and open about these things with our children's education providers. So in the instance of my three-year-old who goes to a co-op preschool, which is half day, 2 days a week, the director of the school knows us, knows our eating habits. We approach it really positively because we give them a copy of our book and we say, hey, you know, we're so excited. If you need any help making classroom projects or, you know, ideas for holiday treats, you know, let us know and we can help you come up with healthy options. And it's worked out really well in our favor almost every single time the parents reach out. The parents or the teacher will reach out and say, you know, we want to make a birthday treat. What can we make that's classroom friendly? Or at the very least, they'll tell us, you know, so-and-so is having a birthday next week. We want to make sure we gave you time in advance so you could bring Wesley something else to the classroom. And the kids have made several of the recipes from our books because they are very hands-on preschool and they like to cook like once a month. And the teachers have always said that the kids love it, that there's maybe like one or two kids in the class that are like, ew, I don't like it. And those are probably the goldfish kids, let's be honest. But that everybody else likes the food that they're serving. So, you know, we approach it really positively. That's at a preschool level because you're talking about a preschool. The other thing too is that we make it non-negotiable. And if they were to tell me that, I was making my son stick out and be uncomfortable, I would say, no, that's you, because you're responsible for my child when he's in your classroom, and it's your responsibility to make sure that my child is taken care of and adopted. And this is the choice that we have made for our child, and it's non-negotiable. And if my child is sticking out and being uncomfortable, it's your responsibility as the parental, as the person who has guidance over my child to both protect them and make them feel normal. So that's when, you know, I would say, what would make my child feel more comfortable that doesn't include them eating junk? Like, is it simply recreating foods that look like normal foods? And I discussed this in one of the previous podcasts where, you know, we make sure that there's one thing in our boys' lunchbox that looks like something else in other people's lunchboxes. Whether that's a Lara bar in a package, or whether that's a coconut milk yogurt in a package, or whether that's, you know, a gluten-free bread or a homemade cookie or a caveman cookie in a package. Like, they don't get those kinds of things all the time, every day. It's not the consistency of what their lunchbox is, but if we sent them, or we did for a while, send them with only homemade things, you know, eventually kids caught on to the fact that they were having salad for lunch and that they weren't normal. And so we found one of the easiest ways to make them not stick out is to have something that looks like what everybody else is having, even though it's not really as bad for them. So that's when they get, sometimes they'll pack a juice box, or sometimes they'll pack a coconut milk box drink, or, you know, there's a variety of things. And when we go to the store every week, I say, okay, what is the thing that you want to choose this week? They get to choose one treat every week. And that those are treats in my house. And if you're, you know, in phase one of three phase paleo, those aren't necessarily treats to you, but those are treats in our family. And so incorporating those kinds of things into their lunchbox helps them not stand out. Maybe that would help with your daughter. I think it's just really important to create that, what I call a trusted partnership with the teachers and the caretakers of your children. So, you know, in the older elementary schools, it's pretty easy because there's so many people with allergies. They don't even ask for doctor's notes. You know, when you sign up your kid for elementary school, they say, what are the issues you have? And you check a box. And then when you start school, the teacher gets the form that you filled out that said, oh, this person is, you know, checked a box that they can't have gluten, they can't have dairy, they can't have refined sugar, and they can't have chemical food dyes, which are the things that I check off on the boxes. And I say to the teacher, I don't want this to be your burden. I don't want you to have to find something that they can have. Instead, here's a box of caveman cookies to leave in the classroom if it's not nut-free, or, you know, come up with something else. Even if it's a gluten-free Oreo, which they sell at Trader Joe's. Like, the ingredients are terrible, but, you know, even if it's something that makes the teacher feel like, oh, okay, I can give this to this child when there's a birthday party or something, I think that, you know, if you're doing the right thing at home, usually, and you're able to moderate the extent to which the children are being exposed in school that really overall it leads to improved diet. And at 4.5 or at 4 years old, you know, it's a little premature for them to really be standing up for themselves and making their own decisions. But the best approach is to really empower them. You know, take your daughter to the grocery store at 4. She can pick out a treat or the things that she wants in her lunchbox. And then if she's feeling uncomfortable in class, you know, there's an opportunity for her to say, no, I like these foods. I pick them out myself. And I think that's the, you know, the success that we've had has really been about empowering our children and letting them make choices. And, educating them on why we live this different lifestyle so that when these issues come up, they can stand up for themselves and feel good about the choices that they've made. They tell me all the time the junk that their kids eat. And I mean, sometimes they'll tell me so-and-so misbehaves in classroom and it's because I saw him eat such and such at lunch. And, you know, I think it's interesting just the different perspective that happens over time. And in the beginning at 4 years old, that's difficult. And it really is about you communicating with caretakers. But as time goes on, you know, fortunately it gets easier as your children are empowered and can make their own decisions. For good choices. And sometimes it's not the best choices. Finn's been begging to let us let him buy lunch at school. The problem is the school lunch people don't even know it's gluten-free. Like, I've been there and I've talked to them and they're like, I don't know. Like, they literally don't even know it's gluten-free. So, he's really sensitive and I don't want him to get sick in school because that would be even more embarrassing. Like,
oh yeah, totally.
Having an accident in the classroom is going to be way more embarrassing than packing your lunch. So, it's really just about working with what you can and helping your children make the best decisions, I think.
That was awesome. I don't have anything to add. This has kind of been a long show, so I probably shouldn't add anything.
Awesome. Well, I hope that helps, Ashley. I know that it can feel really overwhelming, and especially with the, you know, resistance that she's getting, I just want to give her a high five and say, you know, you're really doing the right thing by trying to solve this problem. And as much as I would have wanted to punch someone in the face if they were taking care of my kid and told me that I was making my child stick out and feel uncomfortable, good on you for not doing that and, you know, trying to figure out how to make that work. And I hope that we've come up with at least some ideas that might be good for you.
So, one last announcement that I forgot to do at the beginning of the show.
Is it you're super popular now? Is that your announcement?
That was not my announcement, but I do have a pretty huge giveaway going on my blog right now, and it will still be going on until Monday. So when people are listening to this podcast, like Friday and over the weekend, they can still head over there, and there's like 44 different ways to enter. It's pretty crazy. I'm giving away 4 different packages that all include some of my favorite books and products, and including 2 packages that can be shipped internationally, which means anybody can enter. And 1 package includes a copy of Beyond Bacon.
You knew it was a good book.
It's one of my favorites. That's why it's in there. So people can go see that. But what I was going to talk about actually is an online conference symposium thingy that I participated in. It's called the Not Another Diet Women's Holistic Expo, and it's free if you register in advance. And I'll make sure that Monica has the links for people to sign up. It's from January 20th to 29th, and it involves 25 experts in sort of alternative health to talk about weight loss and healthy weight from the perspective of not dieting and other things that can help people achieve a healthy weight, things like following a nutrient-dense diet, hormone regulation, sleep, stress management, those types of perspectives. And I, of the 25 people, am the paleo voice, although I think that there's some really amazing other experts that have some really great contributions to that discussion. So if people would like to hear my interview and all of the others, we'll make sure that there's links in the show notes for people to sign up for that. And I mentioned it's free, right?
Free is awesome.
Free. It's not free when it's over, but if you register in advance and listen to it while it's on, and it's free.
Cool. Well, I said you were super popular because your big giveaway is because you get 100,000 on Facebook.
I did hit 100,000 on Facebook. And I have to say, it's been really fun. And I really enjoy how my Facebook has really become a community. And it's just this vibrant, positive, supportive community where like people are helping with each other. And, I'm getting to connect with people. And it's what I wanted my Facebook to be. I think that sometimes people can get into these there can be all these arguments and negativity. And I've never banned people for expressing their opinions on my Facebook page. But what I've tried to do is encourage more constructive discussions, and that's really how it's grown. And people are sharing things, and more people are seeing my content, and more people are finding me, and it's really, really fun, and I'm really enjoying it, and I really appreciate everyone for their enthusiasm and their support and their willingness to participate in this community. And I it's because of the people who are liking my page that it is as successful as it is. It's because of their contribution to it. So, so I'm celebrating by giving away a bunch of stuff. You guys hit a milestone too.
Yeah, we had 50,000 on Facebook today. It's really exciting, and part of it's in thanks to you for putting us in your big giveaway. And
I didn't tell you I was doing that either, did I? Did it.
Mm-hmm. It's cool. I don't mind. You can give away our stuff whenever you want. And so we have a giveaway going on, but it'll be over on Wednesday because we want everything to be clear for when we launch our ebook on Thursday, because that is super exciting for us. That's the big thing in our life this week. So
it's like another baby.
It's an
ebook baby.
Honestly, I mean, I don't want to play favorites, but each of them has their own like place in my heart, and this one is one that like just Matt and I did. You know what I mean? Like, well, not just Matt and I, like Courtney and the team, but like not according
there
to
was still a midwife and a doula.
Yes, that's exactly right. Like they're the midwife and the doula, but like they're not a sperm donor. You know what I mean? I just feel like going through a publisher and having a designer and doing those things is this like comfort, you know, like this, I don't want to say a crutch, but it's this thing that I could lean on where I was like, okay, well, it can't be that bad because other professionals have looked at it and they've determined that it doesn't suck. Like this was not other professionals. This was us kind of, this was our vision. This is what we want it to look like. This is what we want it to be about. This is the outline. This is, you know, everything was us. And then we actually executed it from start to finish. So, I can't thank Courtney, our team member, enough for kind of executing my vision. I can't imagine that I'm easy to work with. Amy was in the car when I was like having conference calls with Courtney, you know, on the West Coast about like what to do with the book and stuff. And Amy looked at me and she's like, I could never, ever. Like, you know, my relationship with Amy is very different. Like, you know, how we work together. And Courtney has just been awesome pulling this stuff together. So anyway, neither here nor there. Super exciting, and I'm excited for you. I'm really just excited for the community. It's booming. You know, it was like the top search term in 2013, and I said 2 years ago, like, you know, there was this survey that was done. I don't know, were you paleo at the time? That it was either Paleo Hacks or Mark Sisson put out, like, and one of the questions was, do you think paleo can go mainstream? And I remember the results of the test.
I remember that.
I remember the results of the question were, like, the majority thought that it couldn't. And so I would say that we are officially mainstream. Like, if I say the word paleo to most people, they know what that is at this point. Whereas if I said that 3 years ago, they wouldn't know. And I would have to say processed food free, strictly gluten-free. And even if I said grain-free, like, they wouldn't know what that meant. And now, it's like, it's its own thing that people know about, and it's just amazing. And I think we talked about it before already, that, you know, one success feeds another, and people spread the word, and it grows like wildfire. And I thought that there would be kind of an end point for it, like, oh, you know, we'll blog for a couple of years and we'll put out a recipe book and then the fad will die over. But, like, the fad's not dying.
Nope. Nope, you're stuck.
More people need help. More people want recipes. More people, you know, are interested in more resources and tools. And so it's just growing, and it's, you know, sometimes it feels overwhelming for those of us in the community. I know I'm not the only one, where it's like, you know, information overload and so much to kind of respond to and get to and all these ideas and how can you possibly get to it, because so many people are asking for help and asking questions. But then, you know, you just gotta take one at a time and tackle it. And then, like you said, you know, by the time you get to the point where you're, you know, one project is off your plate, you've got 10 more lined up and you just got to prioritize and figure out, you know, how to tackle them down to benefit everybody the best. So I don't know why I just rambled that, but probably because it's way later than usual and we should get off this podcast.
And my husband and my mother-in-law are waiting for me to finish so we can go finish the House of Cards episode that we started before we started recording. They all want to go to bed, so they don't have, because they have to get up early in the morning. So
sorry,
that's
about
my
that.
Like, yeah, because I didn't contribute to the chit chattiness at all. It's all you, totally.
For sure.
Well, I'm gonna say goodnight to everybody. Thank you for listening. I always say goodnight, and I realize that people could be listening to this at like 10 in the morning in their car, and I always end by saying goodnight. But it's because it's goodnight for me, because I go to bed after we finish recording. So I'm going to say goodnight, everybody, but then...
And then I'll say, have a good one.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Have a good one.
That was awesome sauce. Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal. Can you hear my cat going crazy?
A little bit. You're a crazy cat lady, though. It's okay. We're going to have a paleo philosophy show. Yes.
Today?
Yeah.
Didn't know.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
Remove nope.
That.
We're having a real show with Science with Sarah and questions and answering them. And
sorry, Matt. Please cut that.
Can you hear my cat again?
That's sorry, a blooper moment.
He's going crazy. I don't even know. Normally he sits on my feet, but he's like, I'm going to try and knock this giant cat climbing thing down by, I don't even know what he's doing. It's hysterical. All right. I would not tell you if it sucked. No, I would tell you if it sucked. I would not tell you if it, I clearly am saving up my grammar for the Science with Sarah segment.